so corny.
Yes, we are back. We are back for another episode of Corny Dads, a podcast talking about modern day fatherhood. We're just some corny dads that do dope things for their dope kids.
Yeah.
Man, so we down a couple people today, but we still holding it down, P.O.P.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Mama, I love you. I'm the man with many hats. Some people call me Chico, these gentlemen. Well, then I hated it, but they call me Ace. And my children call me Papa.
Papa.
That's on you, Al.
It's all on me now. Yo, catch me on TikTok, at CornyDadOJC. It's a wonderful day.
Beautiful day. I mean, it's a good day.
Like, the energy is right. The energy is right. It's absolutely different, man.
And as you can see, we have a guest with us today, man. This season, we've been heavily focusing on guests, getting POVs and introspectives from other people. We have our guest with us today, Mr. Pierre Michel. Thank you for coming on the show, Pierre.
Thank you for having me.
So today we're going to have a very interesting conversation, but an important conversation at that. Let me tell you about this gentleman to the right of me and to the left of Oz. Pierre Michel is a Haitian American, or Haitian, that migrated to Haiti.
Ça got fait.
Yo, listen, you got three Haitians in the booth today, man. It might get a little spicy today, man. So, a Haitian that migrated to Haiti, to the U.S. I speak of my grandmother and the matriarch she is. She is a contributing factor. We are who we are today because of my grandmother.
Absolutely.
My mother, his mother, and... Mummy, we made it, man. We on TV, Mummy. So, Pierre's a law enforcement officer. Has been law enforcement for how long now, Pierre?
Used to be. Well, 27 years.
27 years in law enforcement. Started in the military. Marine Corps all the way. Sorry, Army and Navy guys. And then got into the 27 years.
27 years.
NYPD.
NYPD, all the way.
That's tough. So you've seen it all, experienced it all. And today we're just going to have a conversation with him, an educational conversation with him, in bridging the gap. We know over the last couple of years, it's been a lot of talk of social justice, social reform. And this is more of an educational standpoint where we can have a conversation where we can mend the gap and bridging the gap. So... that's one of the things that we want to focus on heavily today. And as parents and black men, we also want to have this conversation as well. Now, Pierre, you're a corny dad. Corny is cool.
Yeah, I'm corny. If you ask my kids, I'm sure they'll say I'm corny.
How many children do you have,
Two.
Pierre? Two. And their ages?
I have a 26-year-old daughter who's an attorney.
Nice.
She just passed the bar the first time.
Congratulations.
And my son is a junior at the University of Buffalo.
Yes, sir, man. Yeah, shouts out. To Kiki and to Zeke and Kiara. I mean, wow, being a corny dad is different, but let's talk about your, you know, we here at Corny Dads, we like to go back a little bit. We like to talk about our personal experiences with our parents, especially our dads. Tell us about your relationship with your dad.
So it pretty much was non-existent. He passed away during the COVID. During my lifetime, we saw each other during, not festivities, but for social occasions.
Right.
I did not grow up with him. My family dynamics are weird. My mother raised myself and my brother, and then for a number of years, it was just three of us. And then when I was in high school, I met my older brother. I met my older sister, and my older brother.
In high school, you met them?
I met them. Yeah. Never before. I mean, I had known they existed, but I had never seen them.
Okay.
I knew their names, knew they existed.
So it wasn't a surprise, like one day you went to school and somebody took your milk and it was like, oh, that's my brother.
No, the funny thing is my old the brother who comes before me, 2 years older than me, he went to Brooklyn Tech. Mm-hmm. And he comes home and goes, guess what? I ran into our sister, Nancy. Oh, really? Wow. She was working at one of the local stores in downtown Brooklyn. And then that culminated in all of us eventually getting to know each other, and eventually the four of us wound up living together. Later on, Alan joined us, I think.
Yep.
You know, and his sister, his mom. That's so. My father, we would see each other again if we ran into each other at my grandmother's home or something, because she made sure that, you know, it was one of the things that she wanted to make sure that occurred, that we got to know my father, got to know her son, because my parents were separated back when I was one. So we're talking about 50 years ago, because I'm over 50.
Yeah. Look good, man. You're looking
thank
good.
You. God is good.
All the time.
Right. So that's how that. So really, through the adult years, we've tried to. There were a few efforts on our part. I mean, I met, again, I had known him here and there. You know, I ran into him at occasions. But after that, I went to the Marine Corps. And 5 years later, I came back to the city. Same thing. So I'm here and there. Mm-hmm. But in terms of a real relationship, that's pretty much non-existent, you know.
So being the fact that, you know, your older brother and your older sister were away, and, you know, your dad wasn't really present in your life in the early stages, who did you look to for, like, guidance and mentorship and to keep you on the right path, to keep you from being on the other side of law enforcement?
Well, I would say, first of all, my mom, because that's what we had. But everything else from my mom that we got was from God.
Absolutely.
You know, because God, so God was what she often, I want to say, reflected to or mentioned, or everything she quoted was from the Bible.
Word. You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, she did.
Oh, I'm clear. You know? I'm clear.
You know, so... So I would say that a lot of things that I learned, I mean, there were a few people I met along the way, you know, at church. So most of the males I met were in terms of people that I could look to support and learn from were people I met in church. You know, I had my friends who, some grew up in the traditional home and some who, like me, had one, you know, had single parent homes, you know, but, believe it or not, a lot of things I learned from, I learned about being a person and a man came from the Bible. I actually, some of these Bible characters, like David, for example, who experienced everything. I learned a lot from just reading the Bible stories about him, about Moses, about, and now to think about it, even in those Bible characters, you don't really hear much about their fathers. They're mentioned in the Bible, but you don't really hear about, and that just came to me now, that they don't really speak about an effective, you know, it may speak of a little bit, but in terms of being nurtured, not much. Even Jesus, his father, he speaks about Joseph, but not really much in terms of how much they were nurtured.
I guess I would ultimately say that in the Bible, there is one ultimate father.
Yes, right.
So there's no need to reference
exactly
the going between.
That's right.
That you talk about the heavenly father rather
That's right.
than the earthly
yeah.
father.
Right.
Yeah, that's I never thought of it like that. Yeah. That's a great observation. And you're talking to two. You speak of like a lot of the friendships and the relationships that you developed through the years, mm-hmm. but through church. That's me and Oz's situation.
Yeah.
We developed
yeah.
our brotherhood through church, Jerusalem Seventh-day Adventist Church. You know what I'm saying?
Really?
Shout out J. Rue.
J. Rue.
And in essence, we culminate that family dynamic, right? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So
absolutely.
That's some very. You did say you brought up some very important points about that.
And the oddly enough, with the things I read, because of what I learned from the Bible, I personally don't read science fiction. I don't read nonfiction.
Mm-hmm.
Or should I say, I don't read fiction rather.
Right.
I only read biographies, autobiographies. Because, like, if, for me, and I've told my kids, I say, if I want a fantasy, I'll watch television.
Got you.
So mm-hmm. everything I've gotten, things that have formulated and cultivated me have been the Bible and books that I've read about people, facts, real facts about, because I found that reading, when you read these books, other books, and this is part of the author's idea. They want you ever hear someone say, "Oh, I felt just like the person in the book."
Right.
But those are fantasy things, and right. and some of those things teach you things that are false. Well, most of the time they do teach you false things. They mm-hmm. often tell you to scar yourself or to turn to drugs or turn to you know, self harm. Mm-hmm. Things that are not healthy for you. But if when you read the Bible, when you read the biographies, you hear of people who have made it through. You hear about their life cycle and the ups and downs of life, and hopefully you normally take something from that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And those are some of the things that have formed me and that have led me to join the military and subsequently NYPD.
So I
get it, because that's perfect, because you enjoy intake in historical context, right?
Right.
So the Bible within itself is a historical context, right?
Right?
Which you believe to be true, and also these biographies that
right.
you're reading.
Right.
So you're like, I just want to know about what's really happening.
Right. Yeah, right. Things
like,
that
who
really
are
done.
You?
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, it's like definitely, it's like, who are you? It's like, let's not fantasize about...
Stick to the facts.
Yeah, let's just...
Right.
Real black and white.
Yeah.
I'm not going to appreciate that.
So basically hearing stories of people going through, like you say, your life cycle and pushing through adversity.
Yes. Malcolm X, for example.
Yeah.
Martin Luther King. Incidentally, some of our people don't even know who they are.
That is true.
I don't know. Come on, you're going too far.
One of my buddies.
If you say Clayton Powell, I can understand what
I'm
you
telling
just
you,
said.
One of my buddies.
You said Malcolm X.
One of my buddies, Marine Corps pal of mine, and he will say this to this day. He goes, and he, the funny thing is, he eventually went to FAMU
mm-hmm.
after he got out the Corps, because he said, "Dude," he goes, I always appreciate the fact that you enlightened me to Malcolm X." And we're talking about 1990, or should mm-hmm. I say 1989. He did not know, and you grew up in Florida. He did not know about Malcolm X, straight up.
That. Did you meet a lot of guys in the Corps that
came? No, hold on.
Ahead,
you
wait.
Can't let that slide. I really wanted to let it slide, but I can't let that slide. What's their nationality?
American, black American. Straight up.
What was their family dynamic? Did he grow up with his father in the household?
From what I know, yes, he did.
Wow. Wow. That's interesting. That's interesting. So a lot of times where we're not...
To us, he's a real character. To them, he's fictional. He's
correct.
Somebody that they heard of.
Heard of, but they're like, oh, all right.
Yeah, the Messiah from the North.
Yeah.
So growing up, even as an adult, as my kids were being reared, I would actually play DVDs, I'm sorry, CDs rather, of Malcolm X speeches, Martin Luther King speeches, and other true characters
mm-hmm.
and their perspective on life and their perspective on black and white, you know, issues.
Okay.
So now I have a question, right? Because if you know Malcolm X, especially now if you're watching television, you know Bumpy Johnson.
Right.
And you know that historic picture that they're now creating. I don't know if it's an AI picture, but it's a picture. You remember the traditional picture of Malcolm X?
Malcolm X and Martin Luther King.
No. Malcolm X, he's holding the gun.
Right. Oh, at the window. Yeah.
And he says, my enemy is necessary.
Yeah.
Right.
And Bumpy Johnson is on the other
Bumpy
side.
It was Bumpy on the other side, right? There's a picture that's like that, right?
Okay.
I don't know if it's digitally made, AI made,
right.
There's a picture like that. So you grew up in a time where 50, you said you're 50 plus, right?
I'm 55.
Right. There you go.
All right, you want to tell them, fine. It ain't my business, all right? So, all right, so you're 55. So at the age of, you know, at that age, you know, for me, those are the people I looked up to, right? So I understand that. Where there was a Malcolm X that we wanted to know about, there was also a Bumpy Johnson. And you growing up in Brooklyn, New York, right?
Flatbush,
right? You there.
Mm-hmm.
You in the thick of it, right?
Uh-huh.
You're in Gaza, right? So what made you at that time, right, with all of the other allure for other professions going on around that time,
mm-hmm.
what made you say, I'm going to go to the military, that I'm going to be... law enforcement, because that to me is heroic within itself. Because
mm-hmm.
I don't know anybody else during that time that chose that path.
That's a fact.
Interesting enough, I didn't actually start reading about Malcolm X until I was an adult. Even though I knew about him, I didn't, but the details of it. But you know what? To answer that question, and I heard someone else say this a few weeks ago, said, you hear about everything else, the race issues in America and just everything in general, police brutality, the stand your ground things that are happening in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And the person said, you know what? I'm an American. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do everything, and I have the same perspective. I'm a Haitian American, but I've grown up 54 years of my life have been in this country.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm proud of my Haitian heritage, but I associate more with the American way of life. And I'm not going to let anything get in the way of me participating full 100% in this life, in the American way of life. And as a result, only thing that I can do is try to make it better. Okay. By me standing outside in the outskirts of it, you know, watching, how does that improve race relations? If we let whites and Hispanics and Asians and every other race in America join the police force and join the military, how does that make our life any better? How does that make our experience any better?
No. I absolutely get that, right? Right. And I believe that we each have our own civic
duty,
right?
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it's like, what made you, out of all the professions that mm-hmm. you could have chose, right? Mm-hmm. You could have been a doctor.
Yeah.
First of all, in our culture, it's either you are
doctor, lawyer, engineer,
right? Or teacher. Yeah.
Yep.
Now teachers are there, right?
Right.
So now it's like, out of those professions mm-hmm. and everything else going on in the world at that time, right? Why did you choose to be a police officer during that time? Because also, if I'm not mistaken, during that time, politically speaking, right, we're talking about the Reagan, the Giuliani. Yeah,
this is Giuliani, yeah. George Bush era.
Like, you understand what I'm saying?
It was rocky.
Yeah.
It was.
Well, it started out because, and this goes back to fatherhood.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about
there we go.
It goes to a lack. So I did not have confidence going up in myself in terms of education.
Mm-hmm.
I had a very difficult time with math.
Mm-hmm.
So I was not going to be an engineer,
mm-hmm.
Haitian. Oh, that's number one job. I was not going to be a doctor because you got to know the sciences.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, the only thing that I could conceivably be is an attorney because you don't need, you know, math skills for that. Sure. You don't need science skills for that. So I went to William Grady High School, which mm-hmm. is a vocational high school in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
I hated it.
Mm.
It was everything there was hands on, and I don't like working my hands. I remember working on jets in the Corps, and I wore gloves. And like, it was so easy, dude. But I did not have the skill set mm-hmm. to push myself, and I didn't have the motivation. I didn't have the example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have two older brothers, of course. But I think there, and this is not an indictment on them, but this is an indictment on, again, lack, not having a father in the home. They didn't really necessarily know how to be big brothers either, you know.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They're good guys. Like I said, it's not an indictment on them. But I went to, so I started out, they went to Howard. I went to Morgan's. Actually, I went to University of D.C. first because I was afraid of not LSAT, but the SAT.
Mm-hmm. SAT, yep.
Right. So I went to a junior college first, and then I transferred to Morgan State. And then after that, I went to another school, and I was like, you know what? This is going to work. I'm now 18, 19 years old. I've been to three colleges already.
Right.
I need something else. Mm-hmm. So at that point, I just joined the Marine Corps, which I had watched a lot of war movies. I had read, again, biographies mm-hmm. about mm-hmm. war heroes. I said, you know what? I'm going to the Marine Corps.
Okay.
And typically,
find your purpose.
Typically, like, what do Haitian parents say? Absolutely. Oh, why?
Absolutely.
Well, I know Mother was a jack in that.
Right. Yeah. She wasn't happy with it, but that was my decision, you know, and I went to Marine Corps 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came out, I needed a job.
Mm-hmm.
Still didn't have a college degree.
Mm-hmm.
I needed a job. And I had taken the police test prior to going into the Marine Corps. Mm-hmm. So I had that available to me. So I was in Manhattan one day, and God must have spoken to me and said, wait a minute, you took a police test. go inside and find out what's going on. So I went in, and I let them know, hey, listen, I took the police test some time ago. I'm interested in becoming a cop. Now, keep this in mind to what you were saying about the events that were happening in New York. Because I was in South Carolina for 5 years, driving back and forth, I was only here on occasion. I really wasn't aware of, now, had I known more of it, maybe I would have said, I'm not going to police force.
Right.
You know what I mean? But at the time,
you didn't know.
I didn't know what was going on. Mm-hmm. I was ignorant. You call it ignorance, call it oblivious. But again, the primary thing is I needed a job, and I didn't have a degree. Mm-hmm. I was unskilled.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I, you know, so I joined the police force, and stayed there for 27 years. Got my degree.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the tiers, right? So you start off in patrol, and you work your way all the way up to a lieutenant.
To lieutenant detective squad. Detective squad commander, so.
Hey, Marv, let me get a bomb for that, bro.
Bomb it up.
Started from the bottom, now we're here.
So, thank you. Started on patrol in downtown Brooklyn. Took the sergeant's exam, was promoted 7 years later. And after that, I was in East New York.
So
I went from downtown Brooklyn. Then I went to Flatbush, the 6-7. You guys will probably know the 6-7
piece. 6-7 piece is tough.
Right. Yeah. A lot of Haitians, a lot of Jamaicans, a lot of West Indians over there.
Yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I took the promotion test, passed it, thank God. Made sergeant, went to East New York, 7-5 precinct. Biggest precinct in Brooklyn, most dangerous at the time. Had a great time. I worked with a lot of great cops, black, white, Hispanic. And I eventually, so I was given the task of being the plainclothes sergeant.
Mm-hmm.
So what my number one task was to get guns off the street, you know. And I had 5 guys that worked with me. We had a great time doing it. Thankfully, no one got hurt seriously. Took the lieutenant's exam. I was promoted to lieutenant. And but actually, prior to becoming a lieutenant, I went to the detective squad as a sergeant, and then I took the lieutenant's exam. Rather, got promoted to lieutenant. And when you become a lieutenant, so I was blessed and fortunate enough to, I never went back to patrol.
Mm.
The normal route is you're supposed to go back when you each rank you pick up. You're supposed to go back to patrol.
Okay,
but as it was, my commanders, my bosses, they kept me, Commissioner Ray Kelly, Chief Pulaski, they kept me in the detective squad. And I went right from sergeant detective squad to lieutenant detective squad. And I eventually was promoted to lieutenant commander of detective squad, which basically means that I'm making captain's pay.
Major. So now during these 10 years.
Big bombs.
You're going through these very, very tough neighborhoods, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we know in inner city communities of color with law enforcement, there's a huge disconnect. What do you think is the biggest disconnect that we have within communities of colors and with law enforcement? What do you think is something that's creating that wedge between the two?
I don't know if there's any one thing that you can put your finger on to say. But, and I don't think there's that much of a disconnect. I think if people our people would understand the law and more. Personally, I think every school should have a criminal justice class.
I agree.
Why not?
You know, and I think that, I think it's important that training officers of every kind, of every race, to understand the complexities of the city and to understand the issues that people are going through in the city, I think, you know, would help go a long way. So this whole idea about defunding the police is stupid. It's ridiculous. How do you get better? You get better by training. Now, you're never going to be perfect. There's always going to be an outlier. There's always going to be one or two cops who don't want to comply, who don't want to listen, who feel the way they feel about race.
Mm-hmm.
And is there racism in the police department? Absolutely. But there's racism in every profession.
Absolutely.
Every single profession. In medicine, in education, in law, in the courts of America, everywhere there's racism. Not so much the police department alone. So I think that we just have to understand that people are people, and people are not bad everywhere, and people are not. And at the same time, not everyone's good either.
No, I get that. No. All right, so I have a question, right? Because right now, a major conversation that's going on in the law enforcement world is about having people of your community represent your community on the forces, right?
Right.
So some of the places that you mentioned, you were actually a representative of the community, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially in Flatbush. You are a representative of Flatbush. You are African-American, Haitian-American.
Mm-hmm. You speak the language.
You speak the language.
Of the people.
Right. And you of the people.
Yep. Right.
How was your experience working in your community? Would you say that the science is accurate, which is if you have people of your community, that is better for your community? Or would you say that, based off of your experience, I'll leave that blank and you can fill that in?
Yeah, I would say that it is good to have people of your own community policing the community, but at the same time, though, it's not an end. You know, it doesn't fix everything either. You know, because our people have to accept mm-hmm. accept you as the law,
mm-hmm.
right? I remember being on patrol and we were at a situation and one of the guys, and there was a question about I don't remember the particular situation, but there was a question, and my partner, who was a white guy, says he's the boss, it's his decision. This guy goes, "No, I want to talk to you because you're really in charge." You know, so we have to respect one another on both sides of the law.
Mm-hmm.
No, I definitely could understand that, because you know, a lot of times you see yourself in a situation, and what people are programmed to always believe is that, you know, if they see another race in a position of power, they're always going to assume that the other race is in control, and it's not you in essence. Now, let's go back to like the talk, right? You always hear a lot of people talking about the talk with mm-hmm. their children. And we're not talking about the birds and the bees, folks. We're talking about the talk with the moment or time that our children may come into interactions with law enforcement, what should be done. Have you ever had to talk with your children? And what is some of the key notes or advice you would give to parents in regards to the talk?
So yes, of course, both my kids drive. And it's funny, when I go to the gym and I go in the sauna, I take my phone with me because both my kids are driving. My wife, I have a wife as well, of 28 years.
28 years.
So,
clap.
Thank you. So so I know that they're subject to, and the funny thing is I tell people also, whenever we have this conversation, I tell people, hey, guess what? When I drive my car,
I'm subjected to the same things you are.
I'm subject to the same things. My car doesn't have license sirens on it, doesn't have a sign that says police on it. You know, so they're going to pull me over, just so I have to be mindful as well. And I don't know everyone, again, and I don't know every single cop. I don't know every single mm-hmm. cop in every single town. So I have to be mindful of how I speak to them. Again, I think knowledge is power.
Okay.
So that's why I said I think everyone should take a criminal justice course, not to be able to, not for the purpose of getting over on the law, mm-hmm. but so that at least you can speak
the language.
The language. And you can speak, and you can feel confident speaking to an officer and say, "Officer, you know, please tell me what occurred, you know." But at the same time, though, stereotypes are stereotypes. They're going to exist. They've existed forever, and they will continue to exist.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So I've told my kids, naturally, when a cop pulls you over, put your hands, you know.
Where they're visible.
Where they're visible, if possible. Turn the car off, you know.
Turn the dome light on. Cause,
yeah, mm-hmm. turn the dome light. Turn the dome dome light on, if possible. Now, those are not things that if you don't do, you're going to get in trouble for.
No, yeah, right.
But we just simply say that because, and you don't have to do it. This is just so that the officer, so you can say, look, I'm good. You know, and I hear the counter argument is I shouldn't have to do that. And you know what? You don't have to. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to, then don't. Mm-hmm. But just keep your hands visible so that you can, so no one can say that you made a sudden movement that made them react in a negative fashion. What else? I've told my son, you know, again, this is not something that, and I hear the counter argument. Why can't I wear what I want to wear? But stereotypes exist everywhere, right?
So I'm curious to know what the stereotype is now. Because growing up, we had a stereotype, right? Mm-hmm. Baggy jeans and Tim's, right? Like, you could put the person together.
Right.
Now, how do you put the person together? Like, what's the description?
Right. Yeah,
that sounds scary.
I don't know, but...
Man so, running with tight jeans? Yeah. Like,
and a fluorescent shirt? Yeah. Right.
But particularly, in this instance, I was talking about... when a durag.
Mm-hmm. Durag. I'm a durag. That's a Haitian thing, too.
Oh, God.
We used to wear the durags back in the day. But I think our parents and our eldersmen, they knew it's like, listen, we understand this is something that you're doing. But we talk about it in other episodes. We talk about the Pusheisty mask, right?
Correct.
When you wear the Pusheisty mask, you want to fit in with the community.
That was the first Pusheisty.
The durag was the first Pusheisty. The Pusheisty is the mask that, you know, a lot of the young guys and were wearing during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. But what happens is you blend into the
But I'm going to tell you real with you. It's like... In our culture, the problem was anything that we were doing that was Americanized.
Yeah, they was with it. Yeah, there was a jacket.
Yeah. Right. Because whether it was a durag, a headband, a bandana, like it did, anything that went on your head, they were against it, period.
Right.
Period.
Right. So when I tell my son, when you drive and take it off, only because I said, you may not be doing anything wrong, but to that cop, if he's watching, he's got two cars going the same, you know, two fast driving cars. Mm-hmm. Zipping past them, the highway cop, for example, and he sees two cars zipping by him, but you can still see the occupant of the vehicle. You got a black guy driving one car, bald headed, wearing glasses, driving, and now you have another black guy with a durag on. Who would you stop? Who would you stop?
I wouldn't stop neither of them. I would hope that they all get to their destination.
He's in politics. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. All things being equal, if you were going to make a stop on them, which one were you more likely to stop?
I wouldn't stop it.
Come on. No.
I mean, in honesty, you're going to... What kind, the car, too, right? The car depends on
all things being equal.
All things being equal?
With the exception of...
You're probably gonna stop the honestly, you're gonna probably stop the guy in the durag. I know there's some people that's gonna be throwing. So I know, I just say that.
Come on, Ace. It's the truth. It's the truth. Stereotypes.
It's stereotypes.
But I'm curious to know why. Why?
Well, you know what? That very same, and you guys, and I don't know if I've heard people say it, some people will deny it, where people are walking down the street, and a black person will themselves see someone coming with a durag, and they will cross the street to avoid them.
It's honest. It's an honest. If you're going to be the realest, rawest podcast out there, it's honest. That's an honest.
Something that happens.
It's an honest.
It does happen. Don't get me wrong. Right. It does happen. Right. And to be quite honest with you, I think the reason why that happens is because we're living in an ignorant society.
That too.
Right?
And imagery.
Yeah. And who says what? Like, we are based, because when you say that we have stereotypes, right? Stereotypes are not something that we develop on our own. It's something that we pick up.
Mm-hmm. But for sure.
So picking up the fact that this young man is tall, he's going to play basketball. Hey, you play ball? Like, you understand what I'm saying? To now believing that, because this young man has on a durag, right? That's like saying... I ain't even gonna go there. I was about to go someplace.
You're about to go down the rabbit hole, but it is an honest conversation.
But it's our reality, right?
It is,
and ultimately, you know, sometimes I know you do the straight bios, but if you like reading any one of the boys' books, right, he always talks about the dual consciousness of a black man, right? Mm-hmm. How in America we have to be two people.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Right? Yes.
Because guess what? I am that same person that you talked about, right? One morning it could be a suit going that way. The next morning it could be a durag and some tips going this way. Right. But it's the same person that was in
Same
in
person.
In the vehicle, right? Yeah.
Nah,
so,
sure.
So I think that that's difficult for us. But ultimately, as a person who was in law enforcement, right, because I was on the other side of the law enforcement, right, I appreciate you guys for the work that you guys do today. It takes a certain level of, like, braveness, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It takes a certain level of integrity and tenacity to want to do something like that. Because I, at one point, there was this very, very small point in my life, right, where I was interested in joining the military. Mm-hmm. The window was like this.
The window
was like this, right? So for me, it was like, at a point in time, I was just worried about providing, right? Mm-hmm. The same way you was like, yo, I don't have certain skills. I was just like, I just need a quick check. Who's going to give me the money that I need now to be able to help me provide as soon as possible? And it was the military. Unfortunately, that didn't work out, right? But thankfully, right, because now that I know what I know, I probably would have AWOL'd. I probably would have ruined my own life.
Hold up.
You didn't tell me about this, right? Because I didn't read the fine print. But ultimately, you know, what you guys do in our community is it's different. It's
selfless.
It's selfless, but it's something that when we're talking about that bridge, right,
mm-hmm.
is how did we get there to where our people are now. This is Dennis's question, by the way, right?
Go spit it.
This is your question. How did we get to a space where we are today, where there is so much animosity, right, between us and the police, right?
Distrust.
Because my question to you is, once you're in uniform, you're not black, you're not white anymore, you're blue,
mm-hmm.
right? But then when you take off the uniform, you black. So let's talk about that level, that duality that's there.
Okay, so what's the question?
The question is, the question is, when you're in uniform, do you feel equal?
Yes. Yes. I you know, and that's a fair question. And that's a question that we have to ask. And I'm trying to think of an answer for you. But I've never felt so racism does exist, right? But I think when I know that the officers I'm working with, they have my back, you know, through thick and thin, good or bad. But I also know that that when they're up, when the white officer, when the Hispanic officer, when the Asian officer is working, no matter where they're from, they're working in that uniform. Whatever they're, in most cases, there's always outliers. There's always,
mm-hmm.
but when they're working, I know for a fact they're not thinking about, I hate this guy's race, you know.
No, right. Absolutely
right,
not.
Right.
That
working,
takes a lot of energy.
Right.
And they're working towards the good of the community. And unfortunately, there is distrust because and sometimes it starts from because of someone's experience with an officer.
Makes sense.
And then they tell their kids. We've seen where they're walking with the kid and the officer says hi to the kid and the parent says don't talk to him.
Right.
Wow.
They create that from
a very young age.
Yeah. Right. And I was talking to someone that I work with yesterday. He's a professional and he's in his 30s and he was telling me, he goes, I've hated cops, you know, growing up, but since I've become in this profession I've had the experience of meeting cops and I don't feel that way anymore because cops are human. Just like anybody else. Again, but I think labels, stereotypes, so the way, same issue with in terms of stereotyping blacks or whites or whatever the case, same thing, stereotypes hurt us,
with
the vision of law enforcement also. Again, the same, you have the same attitudes, the same issues in every profession. But law enforcement takes the brunt of it, probably because law enforcement has the power to take freedom,
right?
And that's understandable. But I think we have to speak on not only those things. So going back to the stereotyping that I brought up with our people walking away. So if our people can walk away because that person is a durag, why wouldn't? Isn't it fair for the cop to think that, hey, maybe this guy is from a bad neighborhood. Also, got a durag on. You know, we react to the same stereotypes, but I think it's important that we focus on
education
certainly, on educating, and not looking at law enforcement as such a bad in a negative way. Yeah. Even Haitians. The funny thing is, even Haitian parents typically thought negatively of law enforcement also, because when you speak to them about being mm-hmm. a cop, they think about Toto Makut.
Mm-hmm. This is true. This is true. It is true. And I think what it is too as well is just that, you know, with law enforcement, it's just like, first of all, Haitians, like, they don't want you crossing paths. There's no reason for you to cross paths with law enforcement.
Right.
But is it fair that when someone's in trouble, first person they call is the cops?
Yep.
You call the cops, right? If you somebody tries to break into your house or somebody's intimidating you, you call the cops. So is it fair that you have to say, all right, well, we know there's some bad apples mm-hmm. within it, but do we push everyone aside? And we have to also look at just the images, and it's important for us to have these conversations.
Right.
Just communicate. Open the lines of communication, because with that, it solves a lot of problems.
Right. So going back to that, so teaching our kids is be mindful of the stereotypes that exist about you. Mm-hmm. So comport. So have the right comportment and behavior. So when you do come across an officer, he or she doesn't misconstrue you as being, you know, on the negative side of that stereotype. You know, so like you said, we have to have two sides of us. Speak eloquently. Speak education. Speak correctly. Another thing that we did is, so on the officer side, when I was a sergeant in 75, I was a plainclothes, we would have that talk with brand new officers that come in. So regardless of where you came from, what you've learned over the years, we just tell them, listen, not you're in a black neighborhood, you're in a predominantly minority neighborhood. Do not think that everyone in this neighborhood is bad. Automatically, mm-hmm. not everyone's good. Be mindful of your tactics, of what you do, but be mindful. Not everyone in this community is bad. And I remember one situation where we had a gun. I was chasing a young man who had a gun, and my partner was driving the car, and I was running. You know, and he lost me for a minute. He told me later on. He goes, "Guess what?" So he goes, one of the guys from the neighborhood said, yo, your partner went that way. Mm. So the typical idea or the stereotype or the thought about it is the plainclothes cops are the gun police are the bad police. But yet my team always did things correctly. And the neighborhood, yeah, they hated us in certain respects. But at the same time, though, they respect us because we didn't abuse them. We did our job for what was meant. When we had cuffs on, mm-hmm. it was over. You know, while until the cuffs are on, yeah, we're grappling, we're fighting, trying to get the cuffs on. But once it's on, it's over. And that community respected us, even though, you know, it's funny. The biggest thing that the biggest issue that I have right now, especially with politicians and other people of and certain factions in the neighborhood, is that they don't want to speak of the violence that comes in, that comes out of the neighborhood when these areas or neighborhoods, when the violence is up. Where are these politicians to speak about the violence? They're not out there. Even these so-called groups who are out there supporting defunding the police and the police are bad and they're evil and this and that and the other, and they're shooting people and they're locking people up when they shouldn't lock them up, or they're hemming them up. But these politicians aren't speaking out when a young person of color shoots another young person of color. They don't speak out. When the last time I was involved in a shooting incident years ago where a fellow sergeant was shot three times. Thank God he survived. And there's a politician within the neighborhood, and I saw this for myself. He's like, this is something, you know. And so the individual who shot the sergeant was shot also. And this politician goes on television when he's being TV, he goes, this type of things, you know, certainly the violence is no good, but those cops shot because their colleague was shot. They assassinated this young man, you know, and 2 seconds later, a kid in there goes, "Yo, this stuff happens all the time. Guys are shooting at us all the time, not cops, but," he goes, "we're always subject to being shot at."
So it's really all about the narrative that's being painted out there.
Yes.
That's being painted out there. Everyone seems to be kind of like pointing a finger. See what you think.
You know, honestly, I think there are some great, I'm not going to call them politicians, but I think that there are some great community leaders out there.
Yes.
That are being attentive of what's happening in our community, because we're the only ones that could tell our story, right? Mm-hmm. We can't expect anybody else to come and tell our story but us. And sometimes I feel like we allow other people's story to really taint who we really are, when in all actuality, the level of violence that's coming from our community is no different than, honestly, what's coming out of other communities. What's sad about it is we are the only ones that are being promoted and highlighted in that fashion,
that's
right?
A fact.
The fact that somebody could think that, you know, that there's crime happening in our community and there's not somebody there championing and asking for help, pleading for help. I know multiple people, right? I know multiple community leaders that are in the fight to promote equality and justice, right? And to me, equality and justice comes from an economic perspective, right? When we start breaking down the number of police, you know, sometimes we don't have all of the right resources in our community, right? Like, sometimes we're short police, sometimes we're short fire, sometimes we're short OEM. Like, sometimes cities are actually operating on at a deficit,
like,
with
a skeleton crew.
Yeah, with their crew. So you have a lot of these people, I think, who are also in our community. They're underpaid, right? So you got people who is in the profession because they only had one option. Like, you feel what I'm saying? Like, and that goes, sometimes it doesn't even matter what the profession is. Sometimes you feel like some of these people, they're only doing it for the money, or they're doing it as a means to an end, right? Instead of doing it for the love of it. I think a lot of the stuff that we're talking about comes with a little bit of training.
Communication and
it comes
education.
With a little communication and education on both sides.
I'm glad you said that.
There needs to be a seat at the table for the community and for law enforcement.
I'm glad you said that. So I think the media, and the way the media portrays the police, the way the media portrays the neighborhoods, and the way the media portrays they always want to highlight the negativity.
Absolutely.
Between that occurs between
the clash.
Right. They love that. They love sensationalizing it. But at the same time, what you said, we have strong community leaders, but also too, we have community meetings and every precinct, every month.
People ain't showing up.
People don't show up. I've been there, and we've asked them. And even some respect, even the churches don't show up. Mm-hmm.
So I'll say this too, right? I feel like sometimes it's our ability to bring government to the people, right? So I don't know what methods that you guys have used, but the truth is there's so many platforms where people get information now, it doesn't necessarily need to be a sit-down anymore. Like, put the information on social media. Put the information in a Zoom format, right? Because there's oftentimes, I'm not coming to, unless it's something that I'm really passionate about, I'm not coming to a community meeting, right? If it's recorded, it's more likely that I would watch it from where I'm at versus having to come to it.
You?
Yeah.
That's what you say, for you, not me. I'm more likely to go to an in-person event than I am going to
sit down. No, I'm saying our goal is we're supposed to give everybody the option.
Right.
I feel
sure.
We're at a space
right.
where now the way that we can feed people information, there's no way for them to say, no, I don't want it.
Right. But at the same time, though, so my perspective was from years ago. But even from years ago, they weren't doing it. And now that those options do exist, those very same people who weren't going to the meeting more likely aren't going to – if they weren't going to the live when the meetings were live and in person, mm-hmm. when those other options were not available – I think there's still a good chance that some of those very same people are not going to attend, not going to turn on the Zoom and watch it either.
I think it's all about, you see the cops out there, community relations, but they're not really getting out there. Like, certain neighborhood that I grew up in, Brooklyn, we knew the DTs. You know, we had nicknames for them and all them, Big Jaws. What's up, Big Jaws, if you're still out there? But we communicate, we talk. Hey, what's going on? We'll say our jokes at each other. Right. But it was all in the essence of just acknowledging each other. All right, these are kids,
right,
you know, in the community. This is law enforcement in the community. So if they saw anything out of place, they'd be like, hey, what's going on over here? Because we're seeing new faces. Things are going on. And that's their job. That's what they're supposed to do. And for the most part, they used to keep our community intact.
Right.
Communication is important. Education is important. A lot of the education I've had, obviously as a black man growing up, I've had a lot of interactions with law enforcement. When Pierre, my uncle here, he became law enforcement, he would walk me through a lot of situations. I'd be like, yo, Pierre, this happened to me. Listen, next time it happens, do this, do that. And moving forward, yeah, have I met some cops that have been a little bit, you know, like, yes. But I've known how to keep my composure. And with the education that I was able to attain, the moral of the story is get home safe. Get home back to your family.
Right.
And the same thing for us as, you know, civilians. We want to get back home to our family. So we don't want to create any dynamic or any situation where it could turn hostile and deadly.
Sure.
Yeah. Thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for the wealth of information that you provided for us today. Anything else you want to say to the people on the way out?
God bless you all. Stay safe, and thanks for having me. And I know there's gonna be some negative chatter on this, but you know,
but it
comes with the territory.
But it's real. It's a real conversation, man. And we appreciate y'all, man. Stay corny.
Y'all so corny.